97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
The New York City subway chokehold trial now on day 18 as Marine veteran Daniel Penny's defense team called a forensic pathologist to the stand before lunch break, who testified that the chokehold Penny applied to Jordan Neely was not what caused his death.
Wow, this case amazes me that it's even gotten this far. I can't believe what they're putting Daniel Penny through. Obviously, that's my opinion on it. CB Cotton with Fox News has been covering this trial. And CB, thanks for giving us some time today.
Hey, great to join you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yes, so tell me a little bit more about this testimony yesterday. I mean, if they can prove to this jury that the chokehold didn't cause the death, I mean, it's got to be one more reason not to convict Daniel Penny of this, right?
So this has been a pretty interesting trial with a lot of twists and turns so far. This forensic pathologist is one of the defense's final witnesses in this case, one of their final expert witnesses, Dr. Satish Chandru, and he testified yesterday that he was retained shortly after the incident happened in May of last year, and he says that a lot of things about the case has surprised him, but essentially, after he saw the video that was well circulated of the incident, he said he couldn't make a determination right away whether Daniel Penny's chokehold on Jordan Neely had indeed killed Jordan Neely. He said after he reviewed Jordan Neely's medical records, he came to the conclusion that a combination of the drugs in Jordan Neely's system, Jordan Neely's genetic condition, sickle cell trait, coupled with his schizophrenia, and the restraint and struggle with Daniel Penny all combined killed Jordan Neely. He testified to jurors yesterday that one thing that really surprised him so far in the trial is that the medical examiner ruled Jordan Neely's cause of death the chokehold before she received the toxicology results. Of course, at this point in the trial, we have no idea how the defense's case so far is going to impact deliberations, but it's certainly their latest expert, you know, contradicts the medical examiner entirely.
And he's charged with first degree murder, is that right?
He is charged with second-degree manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide. So no murder charges in this case. And prosecutors only have to prove that Daniel Penny acted recklessly. Some people feel that the prosecution so far has put on a strong case and a strong finish, particularly with the medical examiner who was so adamant on the stand that the chokehold is what killed Jordan Neely. She said it was not probable that the drugs in Neely's system or his schizophrenia or his sickle cell trait led to his death. But again, now you have the defense presenting its case and calling one of its latest experts, this forensic pathologist, who says, no, my findings are the exact opposite.
Do you think that Daniel Penny will end up testifying?
We're all waiting to see for that, and we're in touch with a lot of key players in this case. Obviously, we communicate regularly with the Manhattan District Attorney's Office about cases they bring here in New York City. We're also in touch with Daniel Penny's defense team, so of course we're talking to all the key players. And Daniel Penny's lawyers are keeping that very, very close to their chest. We asked whether or not Penny himself would take to the stand after this final expert witness, and they haven't told us, but it's something we're watching for. If he does not take to the stand, the only time jurors will have heard directly from the Marine veteran are a videotape, a 25-minute videotaped interview that Penny had with police right after the incident. He was read his Miranda rights. He waived them, and he agreed to speak with police back on May 1st of last year, again, right after everything took place. Mm-hmm. And I think that video, it's been played for the jurors several times in this trial. It's going to give them a lot of insight into Daniel Penny's mindset after what took place. He said several times to the detectives, I wasn't trying to hurt him. I wasn't trying to kill him, but he was threatening people and I was trying to keep him away from people.
Wow. CB Cotton, I know you got to run here. We appreciate the information. Thank you.
Of course. Thanks for having me,
all right,
guys.
Yep, take care of yourself. Daniel Penny is a hero. If I'm the defense attorney, I'm looking at the jury and thinking, I want each one of you who've ridden the train yourself, maybe daily, to consider yourself being on a train where a man, a stark raving lunatic, is running up and down the train telling you he's going to kill people Think of how frightened you would be in that moment. Mm-hmm. And think of how relieved you would be if an American hero, a veteran like Daniel Penny, stepped forward and protected you. How could you possibly convict this man of anything other than giving him a medal of some sort for what he did that day, as opposed to convicting him for the death of this lunatic? The world's better off without him anyway.
I'm trying to think of other ways that Daniel Penny could have stopped the threat of Jordan Neely without the chokehold. And because if he's threatening people, he's going to do whatever it takes to stop the threat, right? So I don't know if he was, I don't know what how they are as far as like size wise, if it was a pretty even matchup, if he would have been able to take him down. But the guy, it sounds like he was on drugs, schizophrenic. So in some cases, I feel like that can kind of lead to this super strength,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So I don't know. I mean, maybe he felt like the only way to really do it to stop the threat was to put him in the chokehold. It's going to be interesting if he testifies, because I've covered a number of trials. I know you have, Mark, when we both worked as TV reporters. Man, I mean, you listen to them testify and then you have the other side come question them and try to poke holes in their story. And I feel like so often it just doesn't bode well for the person themselves to testify.
Right.
You poke enough holes and it raises the doubt, and that could be enough to convict
him. Yeah, it sounds like the interview he did right afterwards was raw and real, and it doesn't give the prosecution a chance to cross-examine in that situation. So I wouldn't want to put him on the stand. I hope that I frankly probably hope they don't. But what a travesty of justice if this guy gets convicted of this. I mean, I really believe that. It's almost like the Ferguson effect. If he gets convicted of this, it's like the Ferguson effect. Anybody anywhere who has a defense mechanism and wants to protect other people is going to hesitate to step forward and do anything in a situation like that if they know it's very likely the DA's office in New York will charge you with murder,
right,
or assault if you hit somebody who's threatening to kill other people.
Right.
We're getting to a point in society where they blurred right and wrong so much that good people are going to stand back out of fear.
Well, you know, obviously with the Second Amendment rights, the left is constantly trying to restrict our gun rights. And, you know, because of, thank goodness, the Constitution, it makes it in a lot of cases difficult to do that. So maybe this is their next approach is, OK, if we can't enforce the gun laws like we want them to be enforced, maybe our next move is to make it like in this case where I know he didn't have a gun, but let's just say he did, where if you're trying to defend somebody and protect people, it makes it a lot easier for these DAs to prosecute them, saying you used unnecessary force, da da da. And now we're going to, you know, put you on trial for it,
because that prosecutor was there in the moment and he knew what force was necessary,
mm-hmm,
right? That which would be none, because it clearly they're a pacifist and they don't want anything done. I when I saw that offered this morning, I wanted to get CB Cotton on here to explain to you that yes, this trial is still going on. The defense is probably getting ready to wrap up here because they've been at it for Today is day 19 of this trial. They have spent that much time and that many resources of taxpayer money in New York State to try an American hero and a veteran who is doing nothing other than protecting people.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a criminal record. He doesn't have a record of assaulting people and none of that. He stepped up and tried to protect his fellow travelers on that train. And that's the thanks he gets from America.
You know, talking about these trains, this, of course, in Manhattan, that subway that he was on when this happened and was screaming threats. And it's just, I'm not trying to harp on the metro, but you hear about all these problems here in the metro. And it's kind of scary when you're not allowed to defend yourself, really, it seems like, when you're in an enclosed space like that.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, our metro here is not all that different.
Well, that's what I mean.
They've got extra security now, supposedly, but you're not allowed to defend yourself.
But how big of a difference is it really making? I mean, we still hear about incidents happening on the metro, and I know they've taken steps, and I applaud them for those steps they've taken to
increase
security.
Should have done that 30 years ago.
Yes, I agree, and it sounds like more needs to be done.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to reverse 30 years of, you know, negative perceptions because you just got around to securing the platforms and putting some extra security out there. It's tough.
Get more at 971talk.com.